I thought I'd take advantage of the fact that I have you to myself. Without the distractions of my cardigan, to prevail upon you to assist in a sketch that I'm making for the radio, which demands a class of 80,000 children. It's amazing the things we do on radio. Now, obviously you're not 80,000, and more problematic potentially, you're not children.
You're big children.
But what I thought we might be able to get away with it was if you adopted a falsetto voice. Obviously the ladies could do, but if the gentleman did it in falsetto. What do you have to do? I'm going to say, the Wars of the Roses finished with which battle? And you have to reply, as won, the Battle of Bosworth, 1485. That's the Battle of Bosworth, 1485. Sadly, we only brought 6 laser display boards, and 4 you're going to see shortly.
Please, sir, it was Bosworth Field.
Well, you are a clever clerk, aren't you? What's your name?
Johnny,
I'm going to be calling on you later, because there's something you have to do. Jerry, have you got the tapes in? Lovely. Okay, so I'm going to call out the Wars of the Roses finished with which battle, and you reply, the Battle of Bosworth, 1485. Goodness knows how this is going to go. Here goes. The Wars of the Roses finished with which battle?
The Battle of Bosworth, 1485!
That's pretty good. Right, now, the second part of this, I'm going to ask you to do that exactly as you did before, but Johnny, you have to reply 1486. Okay? Do you think you're up to it?
Yes!
Excellent. I've got such a good feeling about this. Okay. Ready, Johnny? The Wars of the Roses finished with which battle?
The Battle of Bosworth, 1485!
That'll do. Okay, then you have to say, what was it that was the cause of Edward II's death? And you have to shout out, a red-hot poker. Sorry about this. What was the cause of Edward II's death?
A red-hot poker!
Very good. One more time. What was the cause of Edward II's death? Fantastic. Yes, I think that's enough. Good. Thank you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the team! Where did you find that?
John, where did I find it? Funny enough, in a charity bin. I see why you wear it. It's toasty, isn't it?
Could you cook me dinner up for me?
Nothing in the pockets, is it?
What were you doing, John? Sounded like Pavlov's and his dogs, actually.
Yes, they were terribly good.
Were they?
Yes, you should have been here. Marvellous. Anyway, we're going to record show 2 now. You may be interested to know that the first of the shows that you heard is going to be broadcast next Monday. Not this Monday tomorrow, but the Monday following. It would normally be a show with Jeremy Hardy in it, but because Jeremy Hardy's in the news quiz at the same time, we have to move everything around. It'll mean that Ross will go out, so we'll go next show with Ross. And the show
after Jeremy Hardy. That's how I got the gig, is it?
Yeah.
Hardy can't do it, get your uncle in.
Nothing to do with that. No, it's just a clash of... it's boring, but...
You tell us all about it, then.
Yeah. Right, what will happen is the signature tune to show two will be played in, and as before, we'd be very grateful if, on the mention of Mr. Littleton's name, you could cheer and applaud, etc. Are we ready, Jerry?
Yes.
Excellent.
We present I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games. At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is Humphrey Littleton.
Find us for a second week in the fine city of Leeds at the Grand Theatre and Opera House. Leeds was really put on the map by the Industrial Revolution, and the world's first commercial steam railway opened here in 1814. Called the Middleton Colliery Railway, its advanced technology and efficiency of operation was considered a modern marvel when visited last week by the operators of a Weaver train. During Victorian times, Leeds became a haven for Jewish refugees from Europe, Irish workers fleeing the potato famine, and Indian families from the subcontinent. Evidence of this rich cultural mix is still to be seen in the tandoori gefilte fish stalls, in front of Murphy's Builders and Bar Mitzvah Services. Among the many businesses to start here was that of John Waddington, who opened a shop on Bridge Street, which he visited every time he threw a double six. Waddington soon built a factory to produce board games, but this was the scene of rioting by Luddites, so named because they refused to accept the new Ludo technology. However, the enterprise thrived until 1939, when Waddington's factory switched to helping the war effort. At one time, they produced monopoly boards for British POWs in Germany, which included hidden maps and compasses to aid escapes. One group of intrepid escapees tunneled for 18 months, only to come up underneath the hotel and had to pay £200 because it was on Regentstrasse at the time. In 1884, Marks and Spencer opened their first shop in Leeds and took as their trademark St. Michael, the patron saint of return cardigans. Montagu Burton also established his first outlet here. With the shortage of property, he was forced to take premises that were far too large, but they soon rode up with wear. In Victorian times, many Leeds businessmen provided funds for civic amenities, including the Tetley family of brewers, who built a hostel for the destitute. However, down-and-outs were surprised to find that they were kicked out every night at 10:30 to shouts of, "Ain't you got no homes to go to?" In 1872, Leeds Grammar was formed. And in 1872, Leeds Grammar was founded. The school still keeps a small collection of artifacts bequeathed by their benefactor John Harrison, who aimed to provide the city's literacy through his philanthropy. Remarkably, though, there seems to be no trace of his stamp collection. With the advent of the First World War, the Leeds Rifles were formed, and it was they who played that game of football against German troops in No Man's Land on Christmas Day 1914. However, the spirit of the game was spoiled when the German centre-forward executed a superb diving header and then ran off with the ball stuck on his spike. After the war, the Leeds Rifles returned to join Leeds City Football Club, which was later renamed and became the team we all know so well today as Leeds United nil. Famous celebrities associated with Leeds include Sir Jimmy Savile, Peter O'Toole, Alan Bennett, and of course our own Barry Cryer has seen them on the telly. So let's meet him and the rest of the teams, who always guarantee a laugh a minute without ever specifying which minute. They are on my left, Graham Garden and Barry Cryer. And Noble and Tim Brooke Taylor. And please welcome the lady who slips her legs under the desk and lays out her score books before opening them for the evening. The ever delightful Samantha. Our first round is designed to improve our understanding of English vocabulary, as there are still those who are uncertain which word to use on what occasion. For example, many ignorant souls don't fully appreciate the fine distinction between deficient and defective. Well, deficient indicates being incomplete, imperfect, or faulty, while defective is one rank below superintendent. But meanings of words are constantly changing, team, so I'd like you to share with us some new definitions you may have spotted recently. Ross, will you start, please?
Propaganda. A moral goose.
Barry?
Ebar gum. Drugs taken orally in Yorkshire.
Jim. Throng. A three-piece thong. Ray.
Humdinger, a fly swat.
Marigold, get rich quick.
Dandelion, a big camp cat.
Logarithm, lumberjack's contraceptive.
There's another lumberjack one here. Bigotry, a lumberjack boast.
Another one here. Fairy tale, beer made from ferrets.
Crystallize, retirement gift for Lord Nelson.
Archery, lime.
Trumpet, a lady trump.
Macadam,
sorry.
Macadam, a Scottish brothel keeper. Circumspect, spotted dick.
Suffocation, a week in Lowestoft.
Nurture, Chaz and Dave song.
Cantaloupe, unable to run off and get married.
Harley Quinn. One of a set of five motorbikes.
Lupine, an air freshener. Catalyst, top celebrity moggies.
Pants nay, not wearing underwear.
Porcupine, a reluctant vegetarian.
Wisteria, hilarious hanging plant.
Scum, it has arrived.
Mascot. Catholic nursery.
Pile. Australian bucket.
Bollocks. Unsuccessful Botox.
defunct. Gangster band. Defunct. They never made it.
Advisor, the best way to stop the wind getting into your helmet.
Limpet, little limp.
Fuselage, not many that big.
Tentative, not sure about camping.
Slippery, a bit like a slipper.
Angiogram, Irish singer.
Stylist, a pig's address book.
Aromatic, a handy gadget used by Robin Hood.
Defunct, gangster band. No, you were right.
Okay, the teams are going to sing along now with some well-known discs in the round called Pick Up Song. As usual, Samantha's been down in the gramophone library researching the team's records, aided and abetted by the two kindly old archivists, Curly Smith, kindly old archivist, this is to stop that geezer coming on at the end.
It won't work.
Aided and abetted by the two kindly old archivists, Curly Smith and Chalky White. Samantha was saying she's been helping them rearrange their work roasters recently. Is it roasters or what?
You've had too many foasters.
Samantha was saying she's been helping them rearrange their work Samantha was saying she's been helping them rearrange their...
Oh, I believe.
I think it came from this.
Yes, John.
Could you go from as usual, Samantha?
Yes.
Can you be asked to even come and say to
as usual...
How does he get in there?
As usual, Samantha has been down in the gramophone library researching the team's records, aided and abetted by the two kindly old archivists, Curly Smith and Chalky White. Samantha was saying she's been helping them... Samantha was saying she's been helping them rearrange their work rosters recently. Chalky was getting a bit worried that Samantha might reduce his overtime shift, but cheered up when instead he saw her shorten Curly's. Samantha is back behind the record deck in DJ mode and ready to give the discus. Samantha is back behind the record deck in DJ mode and ready to give the discs a spin. You should sing along, teams, and continue until, at my signal, Samantha fades the music out. If on its return you're within a cheesy quaver of the original, I'll be awarding points, and points mean prizes. Hello, playmates.
All the topicals.
Did you shout prizes? I hope you did. Not you, I wasn't. This week's prize is one to be treasured by every member of Al-Qaeda, who's also a fan of the game called 3-2-1. It's this life-size Dusty Bin Laden. Right, this time with you, Barry, would you please accompany Chuck Berry singing Johnny B. Good?
Boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play the guitar. Go, Johnny, go, go! Go, Johnny, go, go! Go, Johnny, go, go! Go, Johnny, go, go!
Thank you for giving me the clap.
You now, Graham, would you please accompany Simon and Garfunkel singing the 59th Bridge Street? You now, Graham. You now, Graham, would you please accompany Simon and Garfunkel singing the 59th Bridge Sheet Song? You now, Graham, would you please accompany Simon and Garfunkel singing the 59th Bridge Street Song, better known as Feeling Groovy?
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just keep down the cobblestones. Look at the fun and feeling groovy. Feeling groovy. An old lamppost, what you knowin'? I come to watch your flowers growin'. Ain't you got no rhymes for me? Doodity-doo-doo, feeling groovy. <Ba-ba-da-da-da-da>.
Accompany Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warner singing Up Where We Belong. But we climb a step every day. Doom, 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 doom. Love lifts us up where we are. Eagles cry on a mountain.
On a mountain.
Went off very well. Let's move on. Hang on, I read that wrong. That went off. Very well, let's move on. The teams are going to display their acting skills now in the round called Sound Charades. This is based on the old TV favourite Give Us a Clue, where teams mime the titles of songs, books or films. In the original, the players weren't allowed to speak, making the show highly entertaining. In our version, there's one obvious modification, and also the teams are allowed to speak. The undisputed expert's expert was Lionel Blair, who was particularly good at Mickey Mouse cartoons. However, he occasionally had to save the day when he was let down by his team. Eunice Dubb still recalls how amazed she was when Christopher Biggins failed miserably with Fantasia, and Lionel was straight in behind him with his Steamboat Willie. Tim and Ross, will you start, please? And your title will shortly be displayed to the audience via the laser display screen, while for listeners at home, here's the mystery voice. Right, you're guessing this one, Barry and Graham. Off you go, Tim and Ross.
It's three words, and it's definitely a film, probably a book, but yeah. Film, best known film.
Well, is it a book or not? Come on.
There was probably a book made after the film was released.
As they always are.
I know it was definitely a sticker album.
Panini, right?
Yeah.
Was it a pop
Panini, album? No thanks, I mean.
It wasn't a pop album.
And it goes something like this, if we're allowed to.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, mate, how's it going? Yeah, you're all there. I'll tell you what, I love coming to see the Wanderers play, don't you? Oh, well, I shouldn't boast, mate, but to be honest with you, one of my mates, he's in the squad, to be honest with you.
What does he do then?
What does he do? I speak a bit like this because I've lived abroad for a while.
Didn't we first meet in South Africa? many years ago. No, you
now you've got me doing it as well.
Tell us about your mate.
Right, yeah, that's right.
We have where to finish it.
He's in the squad, that's right. He's in the squad, yeah.
The Wanderers.
Yeah, he's in the squad.
What position does he play?
He's not centre forward. He does the rumba. And sometimes a cha cha cha. And occasionally a nice little jig.
It's unbelievable. Does he do that on the right wing, or where does he do that?
It's all over the place. Sometimes he does it in a line, backwards and forwards.
What's his name?
John. he's called John, and he's got a friend called Barry.
Really?
That's right. John Barry did the music for Dancing with Wolves. I think that was a reference too far, to be honest.
I thought you were talking about the rugby player, Barry Jones. I think that's quite enough of that, don't
no,
you?
No, I think we should keep going, to be honest. I don't think this has been long enough, to be honest. Would you like to hear the history of the Wanderers? Should we go and have an Indian?
Yes. Don't go that route. That's what do you.
Yeah, flash dancing is only two words.
The accents.
Dirty dancing, that's two words.
The accents were.
Yes, yes.
Was it 55 days to Peking?
Bopping in Wolverhampton.
Wolverhampton.
Oh, yes.
No,
yeah.
Rumba.
No.
Yeah, dear, dancing.
No, it's more generic.
Yes.
Dancing. It's not a specific dance, it's dancing or
dances.
Dancing. With wool.
An extra mark for you, Ross, for giving away the title. Thereby putting us out of our misery. Your turn, Barry and Graham. Your title's now being exhibited on the laser display board, and here again is the mystery voice for listeners at home.
Cardigan Manor. This is a book.
Book.
And a film.
And a film.
Sure.
Three words.
Three words.
Yes. And it goes a bit like this.
A bit like this.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I'd like to try on a pair of underpants, please.
Yeah, so I see. Might I recommend something in our novelty range?
Oh, I say.
very lifelike.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Comfy?
Well, the forward section seems unduly voluminous.
Sir is being too modest.
No! No. I mean, to be fair, I could get a dozen haddock in here.
Hence the name, sir.
Ah, now it all falls into place. Good morning.
Could it be Brief Encounter?
Is it the...
Very good.
The Thongwood Friday?
Not quite.
Three words, book and a film.
Yeah.
Just recap it. Large wire fronts. Large fronts, large briefs, large...
Yes, you did. You stood up.
Oh, it's the Devil's Own. The Pelican Brief. Yeah.
You're in league with the devil.
Hang on, I think my watch has stopped.
1933.
It says here, let's try another rhyme. So here's a further title going up on the laser display board for you, and Tim, no, it doesn't, start, I'm going to get it, doesn't matter. So here's a further title going up on the laser display board for you, Tim and Ross, and here's the mystery voice. That was a mystery voice. I don't know what happened to it.
Very strange indeed. And borders interrupt us here.
And here's the mystery voice for listeners at home.
Not only that, but he does the mystery voice as well. He's multitasking.
Hello.
Would you like us to get on with it now, Hump?
Get on. Visitors have been.
Go on, then.
No, they don't steal your trousers when you're asleep.
It's the trouser fairy. It's three words. It's a film, and it goes something like this. Oh, well, I'll be off then.
Yep, see you.
All right.
Bye.
Nice to see you, Bob.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Missing
you already. Ta-ra for now. I'll see you later. Give my love to all your friends.
I will.
And your family. Take care.
Right, well, I must be off then.
Right, well, don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Well, that gives me a lot of scope. Foot's stuck in this. Yeah. You go off, don't
worry. Yeah, I'll see you later. Yeah. Right. I better shoot, mate.
All right.
I've got to go.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, blimey. I'll catch you. Yep.
Au revoir as the French say.
Bon voyage, bon voyage.
See you soon.
Let's not say goodbye.
No.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. There's more to come.
The Maltese Falcon.
Correct. Next.
I'm getting Bogartian vibrations.
Farewell, my lovely, wasn't it?
Farewell, my lovely. Yes. Right, moving on. No. Yeah. It was a protracted farewell. Good mouth, go on.
The long goodbye.
The long goodbye.
Yes. Right.
The final title of this being displayed for you, Barry and Graham, and here once more is the mystery voice of listeners at home.
Just try to sound interested, Humphrey. No, go, just go through the motions.
I was miles away. One word.
Film.
Film. Google, you'll have missed it.
There's no time for tea. We're facing a crisis.
What is it?
The Panto Man.
The Panto Man. Jock Whittington and the 40 Gillies.
We've had to cancel it for lack of actors.
Oh, God.
So crowded.
What's happened to them?
Oh, it's terrible. Mrs. McAllister from the post office has gone to see her fancy man in Penzance.
Oh, my God, then you've lost your Abenazer.
Yes. And there's worse. Big Tam from the abattoir is off to Ibiza. Oh. So we've lost our Red Riding Hood.
But you've still got Mrs. Nochty.
No. She's gone scuba diving in Sky or skydiving in Cuba. I'm not going to.
Are you trying to tell me that every character in the pantomime is somewhere else?
Exactly.
Sorry, I wasn't listening. What could you do?
Is it Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas?
So close, good thing. Far as nowhere near.
Is it more of a fisherman's thing?
Loosely speaking.
I'll cut to the quick. Could it be Cast Away?
Oh, no. Yeah.
My word, that was good. Perhaps they should have played that instead. The next round is inspired by the variety of choice afforded by our great national daily newspapers, each with its own unique style. Like the Conservative Daily Telegraph, which underpins its credo by employing columnist Boris Johnson, known as the thinking man's idiot. And the left-leaning Guardian is often mocked for the frequency of its typos. Personally, if I thought I was producing a newspaper with that number of spelling mistakes, I'd cut myself. But today we concentrate on the Daily Mail. The teams will each... excuse me, laughing. The teams will each say one word. I used to work on the Daily Mail years ago.
Very good cartoons.
Very.
They were, weren't they? Were
very good. Yeah, yeah. Fluke.
Do you remember that one? Oh, sorry.
Rufus and Fluke.
He used to do his own. One little cartoon.
Oh, yes, indeed. Very good, they were. Very good.
Yeah, before that time.
Yeah. The Boer War has never been so well covered.
What are we doing? Oh, yes. But today... Sorry about that. A little wander down memory there.
You've got to be back by 7.
Today we concentrate on the Daily Mail. The teams will each say one word at a time in order to make up a headline in the style of the Daily Mail. When I judge a complete and accurate headline has been produced, you'll hear this. Tim, you can start. Tim, you can start. The first word of your headline is Royal. Off you go.
Royal Butler.
Royal Butler spills.
Royal Butler spills beans.
Clumsy Royal Butler spills beans.
Clumsy Royal Butler spills beans and...
Clumsy Royal Butler spills beans and takes...
Careful, allegedly.
Look,
clumsy royal butler spills beans and takes it.
Oh. Ah.
Can you hear the sweat?
Clumsy royal butler spills beans and takes it up.
Clumsy royal butler spills beans and takes it upstairs.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try another one. And there isn't one word in that sentence that has the slightest ring of truth.
It's the Daily Mail.
Okay. Actually, you can hear that. Okay, let's try another one. And this time, Barry, you can start. Your first word is foxes. Off you go.
Foxes enjoy.
Foxes enjoy hunting.
Immigrant foxes enjoy hunting.
Bogus immigrant foxes enjoy hunting.
Bogus immigrant foxes enjoy hunting handouts.
Gay bogus.
Enjoy hunting handouts.
Gay bogus immigrant foxes enjoy hunting handouts claims.
Gay bogus immigrant foxes enjoy hunting handouts claims mad.
Gay, bogus, immigrant foxes enjoy hunting handouts, claims mad Frenchman. It is a Daily Mail.
Okay, it's now time to play the game called Mornington Crescent. Yay! Listener reaction mailbox that we've received no correspondence at all this week.
Aww.
Except for this letter from Mrs. Trellis of North Wales. She writes, "Dear Mr. Sainsbury, please pass this message on to your checkout staff. No, I haven't got a bloody loyalty card." Mrs. Trellis. And on with the round, which just happens to be Ross Noble's first ever game of Mornington Crescent. Now, as a complete novice with no world ranking, Ross is every bit as qualified as the other three. But to make things simple, we'll restrict the playing area to congestion charge zone only. Teams, it might be helpful, and in the spirit of fair play, if you were to each explain your moves to Ross. Okay? Graham, will you start, please?
Okay, explain what we're doing. Well, a traditional opener, like the King's Pawn, really. Oxford Circus, well in the zone, and that gives you limited access to Northern Parallels, but I suppose it is technically laying an offside trap there. Force the next player into nip if he's not very careful. So Oxford Circus, I'd play.
Yeah, that's... So I have to go Vauxhall. Yeah. Basically, things have changed slightly since the Millennium Bridge was put there. So you can back double, so it's basically a reverse move. That's why I say Vauxhall.
Hang on.
Not the bridge.
Hang on. Whoa.
Reverse.
Does that...
Oh, yes. Yeah, go on. Yes.
It's all right.
I can repeat it again if it helps.
There's no rush.
No, I'm sorry.
It's not the only option, of course. But
no.
Don't muddy the
water. No, but it's just Tim's making it sound like it was the only one he could possibly play.
Oh,
it's right. Not.
Oh, thousands.
Right, thousands. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was Vauxhall. Now, Ross, I'm going Regent Street because That is bridging Oxford Circus and Piccadilly Circus. Yeah. So it's an absolute definitive lateral, which you can reverse on.
You can. So
you can reverse on if the situation's right. Yeah. So you've got a double value. So it's a bridger, it's a lateral.
Is that Piccadilly Circus?
Yeah.
It bridges Oxford Circus, Piccadilly Circus, lateral. Very useful one early on.
Best of luck, lad.
So, that was lateral. Take your time, son.
It's all right.
Mornington Crescent.
Oh, yeah!
That's incredible. That is just... That will have improved your world ranking, sir.
It was good. Okay, let's try.
Just luck, or did you work that out?
Yeah, well, if he said that was... Yeah, if it was Piccadilly Circus, then...
Yeah, good bridge.
Yeah.
No, he thought through, been backwards through, and he got it.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, let's try again, but this time maybe don't explain your move. You may confer, however. Dim, will you start, please?
Shooters Hill Road.
Oh. Pretty snaky first off. Shooters Hill Road?
Yeah.
Piece of cake.
Piece of cake. Thank you very much. I'm playing a game at the moment. Oh, Totteridge.
He'll say Totteridge. Oh, yes, he said Totteridge. He always does after that.
So?
New Cross Gate?
I would stick to New Cross. He said we can confirm. So he was talking about...
Yeah, before you make the move.
Yeah, I made it.
He said New Cross Gate. That's making a move, isn't it?
Look, it might have been...
Adjudication.
It might have been a lucky win. Who knows? You know, don't give him a hard time.
Order, please. Adjudicate.
Yeah. I said, yeah.
Oh, life's too short. Let's move on.
Okay. All right. Fairlop.
There was an applause.
Well, Bromley by Bow.
Baker Street.
It's good.
Lancaster Gate.
Oh, nice one.
It wasn't lucky.
Yeah, it was. Turnham. No.
Mile End.
Kennington.
Can I do that? Not during the show.
In that case, Turnpike Lane.
Good. Yeah, very good.
Elephant at... No, no.
Ooh, oh, dear, oh,
no.
Interrupt us.
Oh. No.
You could be up to your neck in Elephant.
Yes. No, Queensway.
Oh. Incredibly good. Sorry to sound quite so surprised.
Yeah.
Debden.
Hi.
Oh no,
I didn't finish it.
Don't be right. I didn't finish.
Is that a piece of cake? Or...
No. Tooting Beg.
Yeah.
St. Anne's Road.
He's getting cocky now.
St. Anne, no.
Come on.
I don't think that's within the rules. But...
No, I can't. No, he's
why not?
Krabitz has blocked the laterals with that. It's a diagonal to Camden Town. I'll do that.
All right, do Kentish Town. You're
going to
be home when you get there.
Kentish Town.
Go on,
then.
Go on, Camden Town.
Dollis Hill.
Oh.
Southfield. Gosh.
Gruelling.
Stockwell Park Crescent.
Oh.
He's played before.
You did that with a swagger.
Yeah.
Because look.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's oh no, bad. In two.
That's in two. Fantastic, yeah. I've drawn a little house. Hasn't got the windows in it yet, but the
barking.
Who?
Barking.
Is that a repeat? Fulham Palace Road.
High Barnet.
Crystal Palace Parade.
Mornington Crescent.
Hey! Ah.
Don't get cocky, young un.
One extra move. We move
on. I thought he was talking to me.
We move on. We move on very, very slowly. To an educational round now with scientific notes and queries. This is our tribute to the erstwhile popular TV show Tomorrow's World, whose presenters prided themselves on predicting every future event of interest, except obviously for the show getting binned. Obviously not all their predictions came to fruition. I remember back in the 60s they reckoned there would soon be colour television. Well, my friends Barry, Graham and Tim have all been on television, and I've never seen them in colour. Okay, teams, I have here a selection of scientific queries sent in by listeners to which I'd like you to provide solutions. Obviously the one about how much finely ground glass one has to put in a casserole to dispatch a man of average build won't be answered, so apologies to a Mr. G. Brown of Westminster. And of course, after the team's suggestions, I'll give the right answers, assuming that they've got them wrong. Right, we'll start with you, Tim. Can you answer this question, please? Can cats watch television?
Yes, as long as they do their homework first.
The interesting answer is yes. However, a cat is likely to interpret a TV image in a different way to a human being. I'm going to say that again because it's ungrammatical. You shouldn't say a different way to, you should say different from. Otherwise you'd say something. Got a little of pedants.
Takes one to stop.
Is this the are you the countdown audience?
We borrowed them
from too many men.
The answer here is yes. However, a cat is likely to interpret a TV image in a different way from a human, as images on flat screens lack many cues for depth perception. Programs they're likely to be most interested in will feature small objects, preferably. Oh, I know so many of these. Programs they're likely to be most interested in will feature small objects, preferably with eyes and ears. Like worms. Programs they're likely to be most interested in will feature small objects, preferably with eyes and ears, moving in a jerky fashion or running away. Oh, okay, you know, Graham, can you answer this question? Kangaroos seem to avoid long pregnancies and painful labours by having a pouch, but since they don't use nappies, how does the mother kangaroo keep her pouch clean?
She uses toilet duck billed platypus.
She uses her tongue, is the answer. The female kangaroo, interestingly, shush. The female kangaroo.
He's turning you on, this.
Okay.
female kangaroo has one of the longest tongues in the animal kingdom. Chew the inside of the mouth, that's what they say. Stop it, Ross. She uses her tongue. The female kangaroo has one of the longest tongues in the animal kingdom relative to body mass. Ross, now, can you provide a technical explanation to this question, please? A few seconds before ITV start to broadcast adverts, a small black and white rectangle appears in the top right-hand corner of my television screen. What does this mean?
I think it's a baby magpie who's coming along to steal all the shiny stuff from the adverts.
In reality, the purpose of this is as a visual warning to operators whose job it is to roll the adverts appearing in program breaks.
I hope you've got lots more of these, Alan.
Yeah.
Let's get a move on, Barry.
Yes.
What would you say to this theoretical question? If I were to put my wife in a perfectly sealed room, how much plant life would I need in that room in order to maintain a balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide such that my wife and my beloved plants continue to live?
Someone keep him talking, I'll ring the police.
Is that the answer?
No,
no, it's not.
There is an answer to this.
I've got the answer here. And it starts off to simplify matters. The correspondent could supply his wife's meals through an airtight hatch. The plants would then only need to provide her oxygen. If she spent all her time eating and dozing, she would need them.
You're thinking of that tongue again, aren't
you? Thinking of David Blaine, if you ask me. If she spent all her time eating and dozing, she would need about 350 litres of oxygen per day. This much oxygen is produced in full sunlight by typical vegetation. This much oxygen is... God, this is boring. This much oxygen is produced in full sunlight by typical vegetation covering a floor size of between 5 and 20 square metres.
Good God.
Back to you, Tim. Can you answer the question for me? Why don't dogs need glasses?
Because they can drink straight from the toilet bowl.
Yes or no? The action, no. The answer is because for most non-human mammals, the ocular refraction for optical... Oh, God. This is because for most non-human mammals, the ocular refraction for optimal distance vision tends strongly towards emmetropia, or perfect vision. It's probably all the close-up work that has made us short-sighted. If mice could work computers, they'd need spectacles before long, too.
Really?
Or even before too long, which is less.
And now the weather.
The Graham, how about...
would have done.
Graham, how about this? Why does a... chicken in labour. Graham, how about this? Why does a night of heavy drinking leave me with a... They're picking on me.
Yes.
Being at the Fosters again.
Graham, how about this? Why does a night of heavy drinking leave one with a lower voice the morning after?
Well, if the lower voice comes from the pillow next to one, one could probably work it out for oneself.
Well, the real answer is alcohol also causes the vocal cords to swell, making them heavier and likely to vibrate. Now this says here, making them heavier and likely to vibrate for slowly.
More slowly.
More slowly.
More slowly.
It says for slowly.
More slowly, shall we say.
surely. Do I get a point for that?
Also causes the vocal cords to swell, making them heavier and likely to vibrate more slowly.
That's more slowly?
Thus lowering the pitch of the voice.
Absolute rubbish.
Ross, another tricky one for you. How does Video Plus work?
Inside the machine, there's hundreds of vowels, right? And when you press the buttons on the remote, they've all got a mobile. And you dial them up, and they go, all right, and then they do it manually themselves. And, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is, yeah. VCR actually stands for Vowel Cell Phone Retreat.
In other words, what you're saying is it uses a reversible algorithm.
Yes.
Yes. Unfortunately for you, it's a closely guarded secret, so the MI6 will be turning up any minute now.
Not if you've got a vowel friend. He rings me up, guess what we're doing?
A vowel mole.
That confuses him.
Finally, Barry.
Yes.
How about this? I frequently make typing errors that follow a consistent pattern. What is the most common error people make when typing?
How the fick would I know?
Other than that, double letters are perhaps the most common type of... Double... That's me coughing. No, it's not. I'm clearing my throat. Double letters are perhaps the most common typos, such as Batouen, Fotball, or Floopy Disc. Okay, I've got a couple of other questions now for any of you to have a go at. And here's the first.
Just think of that long time.
Right. I have a large butt.
What do you have, Hump?
I have a large bust and consequently always wear a bra.
There's the screams.
I have a lot. One has a large. I have a large bust and consequently always wear a bra for support. If I was flying in space, would I no longer require my own? Honestly, I want to know the answer.
The jumper's very slimmer.
I have a large bust and consequently. I have a large bust and consequently always wear a bra for support. If I was flying in space, would I no longer require my bra? And if not, what shape?
Do you want us to answer that, or should we just leave it there?
If not, what shape would my breasts assume?
I'll do that if you don't mind. I think that the brassiere is optional, but I would avoid wearing brightly coloured, luminous clothing, or you might end up looking like a bit of a lava lamp.
Seems to be confusion here, which I'd like to clear up, because the answer says the correspondent would probably be grateful for the use of a bra at blast-off and re-entry.
I've noticed this.
Her breasts would probably resemble her. Who's talking about her? Who's talking about me?
That can't
counselling didn't work. You heard it here first.
Long time.
You read it too.
It's all right. Her breasts would probably resemble the same shape. I'm going to say that because you got him a bit too quick there. That man, come on again. Her breasts would probably resemble, and you laughed there, so. Her breasts would probably resemble the same shape they might if she swam topless, though she wouldn't need a bra at zero gravity.
Please tell me you've got a video of this.
Though she wouldn't need a bra at zero gravity when she pushed herself off the walls of the spacecraft. Though she wouldn't need a bra at zero gravity when she pushed herself off the walls of the spacecraft, her breasts might well wobble. How about this one? Is it true that men think about sex every 8 seconds?
Actually, that's a complete fallacy.
There's a woman down here who said yes.
Look at the miles next to
it. Well, the answer is that it's never been formally proved. So that's not really an answer at all. It's music time again.
Well, it is an answer. It's good.
Well,
it's saying it hasn't been proved. So
it's not an answer. It's just it's like everything you read in the papers nowadays. Speculation.
It's or even competition.
If you use that, this has never been formally proved. They interrupted my program on Radio 2 once to say that the meeting between the Prime Minister and the President of wherever it was still going on.
They'll be saying the same about this program.
It's music time again with Swanee Gazoo. Okay, you have to do that again. Hold it, don't be too soon. It's music time again with Swanee Kazoo. This is where the teams duet to combine the ethereal glissando of the Swanee whistle with the chirpy rasp of the kazoo. Swanee and kazoo are two words that go together as easily as Cain and Abel, first and equals, prodigal and daughter, or never and red. The duets will be accompanied by Colin Sell, whose many fans will be interested to hear was recently in a revival of Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. Colin was proudly telling us that music critics were united in the opinion that he sounded like just another Lerner at the piano. We'll start with you, Ross and Tim. I'd like you to provide a version of If I Were a Rich Man from Fiddler on the Roof to feature Ross Noble on the kazoo and Tim Brooke Taylor on the Swanee whistle. Your turn, Barry and Graham.
Thank you.
you to provide a rendition of Model of a Modern Major General by Gilbert and Sullivan, feature Barry Cryer on the guitar and Graham Garden on the Swanee Whistle. She has a meeting with a builder who gave her the lowest estimate for some work. She says she was pleased to see his tender one. But was startled when it suddenly grew to twice the size. So, teams, while she's away, I'd like the piece to suggest titles of books likely to appeal to a readership drawn from the building trade. Tim, will you start, please? Drain Spotting? Barry.
Far From the Cladding Crowd by Thomas Hardhat.
Ross. To Drill a Mockingbird.
The Wrecker of Sunnybrook Farm.
A Dictionary of Ludicrous Quotations.
Friday night and Saturday morning, but it could be Monday.
Of Vice and Men by John Steinbeck in about 20 minutes, if you're lucky.
Bride's Head Repointed. Grouch Expectations.
David Copperpipe.
1984, well, that was when they said they were coming.
Tinker Tyler, Soldier, a Spy.
Gone with the Windows. The Count of Monte Jigsaw.
Very interesting book about builders' low-slung jeans, entitled Men Are From Mars and Women Can Nearly See Uranus.
Vikram Seth's Suitable Boiler.
Ulysses Is in About a Week by James Joyst.
Farewell, My Lovely Carpet. Lady Chatterley's Roofer.
The Remains of the Day by R.S.J. Permore.
Angela's Ashfelt.
The Plasterer of Ballantrae.
The Invisible Man.
Children of a Lesser Hod.
Bridging Loan's Diary.
Oliver Twist of Lemon in that tea and 14 sugars laughing.
The Carpet Buggers.
Catch Two by Two.
Sex and the Shingle Girl.
The Road to Wigan Pier's been resurfaced, but we've got a bit of tarmac left over.
The Unbearable Lightness of Sealant.
From Here to Eternity. Just that.
Homage to Catatonia.
The joy of flex.